531. Now for our weekly wrap-up of global politics with the University of Auckland's Associate Professor, Dr. Stephen Hoadley. This morning we begin with some quick updates. Firstly, will there be war in the Persian Gulf?
Well, good morning, Brian. The good news is that the British have released the Iranian tanker. I predict that the Iranians will release the British tanker and things will return to a sort of tense but non-violent calm. So no war today, Brian, but we'll keep a watch on this and talk about it in weeks to come.
On to Hong Kong. Will Chinese military forces intervene in Hong Kong?
I don't think so. I think that moment has passed. Certainly the People's Armed Police are ready on the other side of the border. They can come in, but the government in Beijing, I think, is pretty hesitant to take this extreme measure. The Hong Kong police say, look, they do have the situation more or less under control. The number of protesters is declining, and they're moving into places less disruptive. The chief executive officer has now created a communications platform and started a fact-finding inquiry into the alleged police brutality. Both of these, I think, will reduce some of the heat in the conflict. And the chief executive officer will appeal over the heads of the protesters to the ordinary Hong Kong citizen who just wants to carry on with business and school and family activities, undisturbed by these very large demonstrations. So I think a modicum of calm is going to return to Hong Kong. So don't cancel your trip there if you're thinking of a holiday or passing through. I think it'll be okay for the next few weeks.
On to Kashmir now and latest update. Has violence broken out?
Again, the good news is no violence yet. The government of India seems to have an iron hand clamped down on that former state. Now it's a directly administered territory of the central government of India. I'm a little bit pessimistic that it will last. I hope it will, but the people of Kashmir have been pushed about, and some 4 million of them with a different religion to those of the central government of India. And are now deprived or have been deprived of cell phone coverage and other basic services. So let us hope that things remain calm there. But again, we'll be watching this in weeks to come, Brian.
Now on to the Pacific, Dr. Stephen. Pacific Island Forum leaders meeting in Tuvalu, which concluded on Friday. You think it was a successful forum for our Prime Minister, the Right Honourable Jacinda Ardern? Some of your takeaways from the meeting?
I think the international opinion and national opinion, but maybe not national party opinion, was that Jacinda did very well at the forum. She not only was able to get in some very strong statements about climate change, but she ended up in the photo opportunity and other places next to Prime Minister Bainimarama of Fiji. They seem to get on well. They're on the same page with regard to climate change initiatives. And by all accounts, she was the star of the show. Besides, of course, Sopoanga, the prime minister of Tuvalu, she was the most popular leader there and the one that the Pacific Island leaders related most easily to.
Maybe not so popular, a bit of strife between our PM and the Australian Prime Minister, Mr. Scott Morrison.
Too right, Brian. Scott Morrison did succeed in watering down the final communique. Instead of the Pacific Island leaders wanted a direct statement that Australia should phase out of coal. Of course, a large number of people in Australia are employed in the coal industry, and Scott Morrison was able to change the wording a little bit. So the forum members are going to be asked to reflect upon the UN Secretary General's call to phase out coal generally. So Australia was successful in easing the phrasing of the final communique. But certainly this broadcaster by the name of Alan Jones, former rugby coach, by the way, so he's had his clashes with the All Blacks in the past, has exaggerated the situation. And ended up saying that somebody should stuff a sock down Jacinda's throat. Well, he's apologized for that. He didn't wish to incite violence, which he did. And even the Prime Minister of Australia came on to Jacinda's side and said, look, I don't endorse that kind of talk. So it all thing was a bit of a storm in a media teacup. The reality was that now Jacinda is on good terms with Scott Morrison. In fact, the latest report is that Scott Morrison on his desk has a stuffed kiwi. This is because he lost the bet about who was going to win the rugby game and the Bledisloe Cup on Saturday. Well, his team lost, and so in order to fulfill the bet, he's going to carry around a kiwi for the coming week to show that he's a good sport and a good loser. So I don't think there's any permanent damage done between our Prime Minister and Australia's Prime Minister.
Talking about a media win referencing Alan Jones, columnist Fran O'Sullivan with a hypothetical scenario that New Zealand should take a million Australians displaced by climate change. What do you make of that?
Well, that's pretty extraordinary. The idea was that a million Australians would come here and they would give New Zealand $100 billion. Well, okay, big questions arise. What kind of Australians would come? Where would we put them, given the housing shortage already? Would the payment be, in fact, commensurate with the costs to New Zealand? But it did raise the whole question of what should we do about what are loosely called climate change refugees, people displaced by rising sea levels. And I put forward an idea that we should divide up all of the possible displaced people and allocate them fairly to all the governments of the world. That is, on accordance with population basis, with their wealth, with their ability to resettle. And that if every country in the world, say 200 countries, roughly speaking, took a portion, a fair portion of the refugees, and then if they took, if they reduced their climate change emissions, then they could reduce their refugee intake. So this would be an incentive to reduce their emissions. So the more emissions that a country produces, China and the United States produce the most, they would take the most of the climate change refugees. It would be a direct link. It's like an extension of the polluter pays principle. In this case, the emitter pays principle. And the payment is take those people displaced by rising sea levels. Well, we'll see where these two ideas go. Fran O'Sullivan's idea, take a million from Australia and be paid for it by Australia. And my idea of that emitters should take a portion of the refugees depending on how much they emit greenhouse gases.
On to U.S. President Donald Trump now, who'd like to buy Greenland. Could this be the beginning of something? Could he be looking at buying one of the Pacific Island countries in our neighborhood in the foreseeable future?
Well, Brian, I thought the same thing when I read this. I thought if rich people or rich governments can go around buying up other countries, well, Pacific Islands must be an attractive prospect. You know, all that sunshine and nice living, nice people. I reflected on that a moment, and I came up with the fact that any Pacific Island government is free to sell parts of it. That is, they can sell uninhabited islands, they can sell building plots, they can sell houses, they can sell ordinary property the way that you and I do. But the question is, a whole country would require, what are you going to do about the people? Okay, maybe the government would say, let's sell the whole country and eliminate the debt to China, for example. And that's one way of doing it. This has been done before. China's been given ports and other access, other land in return for debt forgiveness. But to sell a whole country, I think, is not really possible in this day and age because the United Nations has ruled that the right of self-determination of peoples must be the principle and that people must be consulted. So a government couldn't really sell a Pacific island out from under the people who live there without seriously consulting them and arranging for their future. So I don't think we're in immediate danger here in the Pacific region of the United States buying up bits of anything more than just small bits of real estate, transacted in the normal way in which real estate is bought and sold.
Mm. And staying in the Pacific, here locally in New Zealand, I see in the news that our Defence Force is getting a new headquarters. Sounds a bit extravagant.
Well, on the face of it, they are taking over the Bowen State Building, which was originally built for the Department of Works way back in the 1960s. There's been a multi-million dollar makeover of that building and the surrounding buildings and park. And it does look quite flash. It's going to have special electronics and special security devices built into it, as is appropriate for a defense establishment. But they have been living hand-to-mouth since the big earthquake, because their defense house, a new building purpose-built for them, was destroyed. They had to squeeze into the old Freiburg house. Some of the people had to be dispersed into Upper Hutt, Lower Hutt, and offices in other parts of Wellington. So the defense force have been a bit out of a disadvantage. The close coordination that is ideal was lacking. And now moving into one facility in October means they can all work together. They can coordinate better. They'll be more efficient, amenable to doing a good job. And if you look at the overall expenses, New Zealand is spending just a little bit over 1% of its gross national product on defense. This is one of the lowest percentages in the whole world. And New Zealand, of course, as a relatively small economy, probably spends less on defense and gets more bang for the buck, that is, goodwill and efficient surveillance and a presence abroad. The flag is shown abroad by our military folk in the air, on the sea, on the land. And that I think, by and large, we're getting a pretty good deal from our defense force, economical, effective, and I don't begrudge them at all their what we might call a new headquarters. It's really a refurbished headquarters, but I wish them well when they move in October.